Hello and welcome to Don't Pee on Your Leg and Other Scientific Misconceptions, where every episode we discuss some scientific misconceptions and we hope that you learn something you didn't already know about the world. I'm here with my co-host, Camden. Would you like a LaCroix? Hanslick Burton.
And joining me is my co-host, Margaret. Don't forget to burp it. Hanslick Burton.
Welcome to the show. Our first segment every week is the one in which we share something that we're excited about. So, Camden, what are you excited about?
Well, I looked at Google and it told me that it has been exactly 50 days since we started our quarantine together. So,
oh my God.
Cue the music?
What music would you like cued?
Womp, 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 womp. I had a mix of both exciting and maybe like some
yeah, it sounded like you're like you're gonna say like womp 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 womp.
Yeah,
womp.
But it's not totally that okay. All the time. I also learned that that's quick math about 1/7 of a year. So happy 1/7 of quarantine birthday, everyone! How are we all doing out there? I hope you're all doing well.
Good.
I hope people are staying safe. They're listening to experts. They're staying 6 feet away from folks when they walk around. They wear a mask out in public. Wash your hands whenever you come in and out of your domicile.
Wash your phones. House. Not underwater. Like, disinfect them, please.
Disinfect your phones and just take care of each other out there. We're all doing our best to keep things afloat.
That's right. That's right.
Margaret, what are you excited about?
Somewhat relatedly... although it was happening before quarantine, I am excited about online therapy.
Hey.
So I don't make a secret of the fact that I am one of millions of Americans who has a therapist for one reason or another. And I've been seeing my therapist for 2-ish years now, but we normally see each other in person. With all this going on, now we see each other online. And so I'm still able to have... conversations with her, and I'm able to have them the same times that we normally would. They're just online now. So if you have not considered therapy or have or aren't sure how it works right now, it's a great time to look into it because there are a lot of online options. You don't have to be in person, and it's really helpful to have somebody to talk to, a professional to talk to, especially in these times. So yay, online therapy.
Yay, online therapy.
So let's head into the main segment of the show, which, of course, is where we talk about our misconceptions. Every week, we each bring a new scientific misconception to share, explain, discuss. We have not heard each other's misconceptions before, or at least we don't know which ones we're covering that episode. Sometimes we give each other a code word, so we're making sure we're not doing the same one. Did we give each other? Oh, yes, we did.
Yeah,
we did.
Yeah, we're safe.
Okay. So this way... you know, you're listening along with us. We're all hearing the other person's for the first time. Now, Camden,
yes.
Normally we flip a coin to see who goes first. We never have a real coin.
To honor your favorite animal's birthday today.
My dog, Oliver. Oh, he's 13. He's a teenager.
He'll be 13 in one day whenever y'all are listening to this.
Oh, happy birthday, Oliver.
In honor of his birthday, we should...
oh, I thought you had a plan.
No, I was just trying to hope. I was really hoping that something would come to me.
No, here's what we'll do. It is, thank you for mentioning his birthday. Oliver is a schnoodle. He is 13. He is, and I think this is, speaking of science, this is scientifically backed up. He is the best dog in the universe.
Sorry, listeners.
All dogs are the best dogs, but he is truly the best dog in the universe. I wish we were together. Anyway, Cameron's giving me this signal that says... please, can we continue? No, we can't. Oliver's great. Everyone send him a virtual hug. All right. So I was proactive, actually. I looked up flip coin on Google, and I found that you can indeed flip a virtual coin.
Thank God.
So we're going to flip a coin. Do you want to call it in the air?
Yep.
Okay, ready?
Air
go.
Quotes. Tails.
Heads. My turn. I never get to go first. It's not rigged. I guess you didn't see it happen, but I promise. Mm-hmm. Okay. So my misconception. Camden.
Margaret.
What happens when you touch a toad or a frog?
You get warts.
No.
What?
I know. It's a misconception.
On this show.
I know.
Oh, that joke never gets old.
So we're going to talk about whether or not toads or frogs can actually give you warts if you touch them.
Love it.
Got a couple sources. San Diego Zoo, Burke Museum, very own Seattle Museum, National Geographic, National Geographic Kids, How Stuff Works, Los Angeles Times, which...
Don't touch toads.org.
Don't... Yes. The article from the Los Angeles Times was by Dr. Jonathan Fielding and Valerie Olney, University of Notre Dame Health Services, WebMD, and the Mayo Clinic.
Woof.
Lots of folks have a lot to say about this. So before we get into like the meat of this myth, let's talk a little bit about frog and toad basic biology, some anatomy. So frogs and toads and a lot of other animals are amphibians. What's an amphibian, Camden?
So amphibian is, they're closely related to reptiles, but they're not reptiles.
Yes, they're often mistaken for reptiles.
Yes. I'm trying to think, what are the classics, like characteristics of, they lay eggs.
Well, let's just think.
Part of their life cycle is in the water.
Yeah, yeah. And what about the rest of their life cycle? Do they need to be near kind of...
water. They do need to be wet.
They do.
Dry amphibians are not happy.
They're called
amphibians.
Reptiles.
Oh, no. Misconception.
Not exactly.
But they're not living very well.
No. So you've touched on a lot of the main points. So amphibians, they're animals with backbones. They're vertebrates that need a moist... I'm really sorry for that word. They need a moist environment to live. They might not need to live in an actual body of water, but they need to live in a somewhat like, you might think of like poison dart frogs in a rainforest. It's got some humidity going on.
And I think amphi is a Greek root for like two or both.
When you say, I think, did you look that up just now?
Yeah, I was trying to make sure it was not Latin. I knew it meant two. I just didn't know if it was Greek or Latin.
Sure.
Way to call me out on it.
There's no shame in Googling. We're all learning.
Fine. Click. Ding. Looking. Greek.
Great.
Margaret, Google says it's Greek.
Great. There are around 5,500 species of amphibians that we know of. Examples of amphibians are newts, salamanders, frogs and toads, and... Sicilians, which I'm not saying a person who lives in Sicily, but
there are probably amphibians that live in Sicily.
There are, but these are Sicilians, which are, when I saw a picture of them.
Are they legless snakes?
Yes. And he didn't Google that one, you guys. I saw.
There is no clicking.
I saw him not Googling. Yeah, they are legless amphibians. When I first saw a picture of them, I thought it was a huge worm, which is a nightmare for me. Oops, sorry. And so those are just a couple of examples of the many, many different kinds of amphibians. They, as you mentioned, they need a watery, humid environment because they take in water and they breathe through their skin, which is really thin.
Yeah.
And like you said, too, most amphibians go through a metamorphosis phase. We often think of like tadpoles where they start out by being in the water. And then as they grow, they develop limbs and they have lungs, so they need to be out of the water as well. So we're going back to our myth about being able to get warts from toads and frogs. This myth may have arisen from the appearance of toads and frogs because they kind of look
a little warty.
Yeah, they look maybe a little bumpy. But I learned, I did not know this, that the wart-like or wart-looking bumps on toads can produce toxins.
Whoa.
And this is to varying degrees, of course, depending on the species. But they are the parotoid glands that are behind a toad's ear holes that can be dangerous. That poison can irritate our skin. So
and probably things trying to hurt them. Even yes. if they don't hurt us, they might hurt their predators.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Not everything. I only say that for folks. Sometimes we think of like, oh, it's not poisonous to humans. It's not poisonous. Well, it just isn't that humans are their predator, so it doesn't matter if it hurts us.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. Are you thinking about Carl Pilkington?
Oh, I mean, always. Which part of Carl Pilkington are you thinking
when he says, if you're not familiar with Carl Pilkington, he's a man who is often on the Ricky Gervais
He's a British show. Naturalist.
Oh my gosh. He does not understand just how biology works. He says something like, why are poison dart frogs trying to kill me? I'm not trying to lick them.
Oh yeah.
And he doesn't get that, like, it's not about you. Yeah. They're poisonous because they're the prey of many other animals in the rainforest. They're not worried about
they're
humans.
They're not out for
really.
You.
Yeah, they're yeah. not trying to kill a man.
Often he's confused by things that don't serve mankind.
Yes.
He's like, what's the point of worms? What are they doing for us?
What's an octopus doing for us?
Yeah,
like it's not
why
for
are they
us, Carl. Anyway, that's a tangent.
Go look up Carl Pilkington.
Yes, but there are poisonous glands that toads have. So that may be how it started. Like people were feeling an irritation on their skin and maybe thought like, oh no, a wart's happening. Interesting side note is one cure that people used to think worked for warts.
I'm nervous.
Was burying a cat at midnight.
Oh.
Please don't do this. Please don't do this.
For a lot of reasons.
For a lot of reasons.
Your
it
cat
won't
will
help.
Be angry.
Your cat will be angry. Your warts will still be there. So here's why it's not true. According to dermatologist Jerry Litt, and I'm sure many other dermatologists, warts are not caused by animals. Do you know what they're really caused by, Camden?
Oh, skin issues.
To some extent, yes. They're caused by a virus.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Scientists still don't know why some people get warts from a virus and some people don't. But we do know that we don't get them from amphibians. Just like you don't get a cold every time you come in contact with someone who has a cold, even if you shake the hand of someone with a wart, you won't get a wart. You're not guaranteed to get a wart, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So not even like person to person are they guaranteed to be spread.
Because the virus isn't spread through the wart.
It can be.
Sometimes.
It can
be. But not,
be.
I'm thinking of there are sexually transmitted infections
yes.
that lead to warts.
Yes.
And touching warts is not necessarily the guarantee of like how to pass a virus. However, maybe you're about to get into how these can be transmitted.
Well, I'm about to touch on it, but there are many ways that a virus can spread, and therefore there are many ways that warts can spread. It can be from the wart itself.
Okay.
Depending on the kind, because there are also many different kinds of these
right.
wart-causing viruses, so they're all different.
I'm sure there's hundreds, thousands, maybe.
There are at least hundreds. The virus causes extra skin cell growth.
Fun.
Kind of causes them to go... the skin cells to go kind of crazy.
Nice.
Many different types of warts can show up anywhere on your body, but hands and feet are the most common places to see them.
Okay.
Warts are caused by one of the many types of human papillomavirus, which is HPV. It's not just a sexually transmitted virus. There are also many other strains, if that's the correct word. Warts can be spread through direct contact with an infected person or through contact with the virus on a surface.
Okay.
So that's why they always tell you like wear shoes in the locker room, wear flip-flops in the shower, because if someone else has one of those viruses on their feet, even though you aren't touching their feet, you're touching a surface their feet touched with yours. So wear flip-flops.
So you can treat it like other viruses, it sounds like.
Yeah.
If someone has a cold, you wouldn't go touch the doorknob that person just touched right away.
Not in these times, certainly.
Especially in these times.
Most common warts, though, like those found in your hands and feet, they should go away on their own. But of course, if you're concerned, you can talk to a doctor. There are many ways to get rid of them if you want. To
burying
speed
a
up
cat?
The process. No.
You just
can't
said.
Remember. We talked.
Oh.
No, don't. No.
Don't bury your cats. Pet your cats gently.
Very gently. If they want to be petted. In my experience, cats don't always want that. They are fickle friends. I still love them. So here's why you shouldn't touch frogs or toads anyway, despite the fact that they can't give us warts. A, I learned that some amphibians can give you salmonella, which you don't want, I assume. And if you touch a frog or toad, you could make the animal sick. When I used to work at a zoo where I did educational programs with amphibians, we always had to wear gloves because their skin is really permeable, which is great for their breathing and for taking in water, but it's also really easy for all kinds of stuff to get through their skin.
So like if you're wearing like, lotion. Am I getting this right? Yeah. Okay, lotion, stuff on your skin, because they breathe through it, that's also like same as if you put lotion on your mouth,
yeah.
Like you are going to bring that into your body.
Exactly. Yeah. So chemicals, illnesses from our skin, they can easily infect an amphibian like a frog or a toad. It's also a really good reminder to avoid pesticides, other chemicals like that, because those chemicals can easily go through the skin of amphibians and be fatal to them. And because those chemicals, when it rains, can go into our waterways, you just want to avoid them because it hurts a lot of our ecosystem and environment. So if you find a frog or a toad, you're not going to get warts, but leave it alone anyway. They're doing their thing. Consider yourself lucky to see an animal like that. Do you remember recently when we were on a walk, we heard what I assume was a toad, and we like hoped to see it. We remember when we like stood still for like 20 minutes hoping that we would see it. We never did see him, but it's okay. Just if you see him, take a picture, go on your way. They won't give you warts, but...
But you shouldn't touch him for other reasons.
Yeah, yeah.
Quick question before you end it.
Sure.
Kissing it. Where do we stand on that?
Not great. I think...
Do you know where I'm going with this?
You're not going to get a prince. I don't even think that's a scientific misconception. I think that's just a
regular fairy tale. Misconception.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Don't kiss them either.
Got it.
You won't get a prince. You might get salmonella.
And they might get your lipstick into their body.
That's right.
Got it.
Yeah.
Thanks, Margaret.
Yeah. All right. What do you have for us, Camden?
Margaret.
Mm-hmm.
Birds of a feather.
Flock together, traditionally, I would imagine.
There we go. She's so wrong. First off, let's talk to our good old friends at Grammarist.com. What does birds of a feather flock together? Well, before I go for what they said, you probably know it.
It means like similar people. At least the application to humans is like people who have similar traits or similar interests. They tend to hang out together.
Yeah. People of similar interests, backgrounds tend to have similar interests, so they hang out.
Mm-hmm.
Very good.
Thank you.
Where did this come from? Margaret, I would like you for a second to scroll down into the notes.
Okay.
And find where I have highlighted where it comes from.
Source.
No, like where I highlighted. Oh, I see.
The expression birds of a feather flock together came from a 1545 work called The Rescuing of Romish Fox, written by William Turner.
Go ahead.
Oh, boy. Are we assuming they're Scottish? Because that kind of looks...
Yeah, it's definitely...
Do you want me to do it?
It's definitely British Isles. I couldn't make out... I couldn't, through digging into it, find if it was Gaelic, Scottish, something's okay. Going on here.
So do you want me to do an accent? Is that what you're saying?
Accent and just have fun reading it.
Okay, so this is from The Rescuing of Romish Fox, written by William Turner of Pirates of the Caribbean fame, I'm assuming.
In 1545.
Birds of a kind and color flock and fly always together.
Yay, that was great. That is exactly why I had you read it.
Thank you.
All right, get on my notes.
Okay, sorry.
Don't ruin it. So birds of a kind and color flock and fly always together. I didn't say it as well. Is that true? It's been with us for years.
Mm-hmm.
Is it true, Margaret?
Well, I imagine in some cases it is.
Very good. It is true sometimes.
Like flamingos, for example.
Yep. That's the only bird actually. No. So never mind.
No, and Canadian geese. And, okay,
that is the second bird.
And crows tend to, and like starlings.
Yeah, so let's get into the birds. Why do some birds flock together? Some of my sources here are Ornithology, the third edition, which is a giant textbook by mm-hmm. Frank B. Gill, and the Audubon Society of Missouri. I also went to Stanford, which we'll talk about in a bit, and the Oregon Field Ornithological Society.
Wow. That's a mouthful.
Yeah, I love them. So, Margaret, why do some birds flock together?
You know, I actually did research on this during grad school.
Great.
With a bird called the Andean Cock of the Rock.
Okay.
Beautiful bird, very odd-looking bird, but I did a lot of research about, like, why flocking birds might make a call, because it puts them at more danger from a predator. Anyway, that's neither here nor there, but they basically flock together, if they do, for protection, because their safety in numbers, much like some fish school together, mm-hmm. You're less likely to be eaten if you're in a school than if you're out there on your own,
yeah.
depending on who you are.
So, yeah, they're less, it helps protect each other. One way they could protect each other is by, like, calling, warning mm-hmm. each other, being on the lookout. And another I learned about, which I had seen, but I didn't know, like, the biology behind it, is mm-hmm. called a murmuration.
Yes. Oh, my God.
Go for it.
No. So, I know about a murmuration because Johnny Flynn, one of my favorite musicians, has a song called Murmuration. And it is a grouping of starlings?
Often starlings. It's any bird.
Any bird.
Can
okay.
do a murmuration. Can murmur? I don't know.
But correct me if I'm wrong. I could be. But it's basically where this big flock of usually tiny birds, I think, like, moves together. It looks like a cloud almost of birds. Is that right? Am I
mm-hmm,
close?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, giant cloud of birds move together in what is called a murmuration. You're right. The European starlings are a beautiful example of this. I think across Europe for those starlings, people call it the black sun because it'll move in such yeah. a way and block out part of the sun. There are certain times a year when they show up from their migration. But yeah, a murmuration, they've shown that because the things that hunt them, like, for example, like a peregrine falcon, find mm-hmm. they lock into one bird.
And it's hard to do that if there's like a thousand of them moving together.
Yep, if it's moving like a cloud, it's very hard to act and look for just one bird. This will become more important later, a murmuration.
Sure.
So we have to not be eaten. Why else might you flock together?
Well, it could be to not get eaten covers kind of a lot of things, mm-hmm. right?
Like, there's some others.
Okay. Because, yeah, I'm thinking, like, confusing predators. Could it be to help raise young?
Yeah, a bit. We'll throw that under mating.
Okay.
Sometimes you flock to find mates.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They'll come in together and to maybe raise, and we'll get into that in a bit, too, raise young. Another is sort of the opposite of being eaten, to eat.
Oh, right, right.
To forage. And then there's one I kind of already mentioned that it helps them avoid being eaten, but they are doing this on very long trips.
Migration.
To migrate.
Mm-hmm.
Some birds will, I don't want to give it all away yet. Some birds come together to migrate.
Okay.
And one, the Audubon Society of Missouri said also it teaches young birds how to fly in a flock.
Okay.
So some of it's not just to migrate together, but to teach
So kind of
other
basically
birds
like
the
all
route.
The benefits of a social group.
Yeah.
Okay.
Why it would be helpful to be in a social group is true for birds as well.
Right.
We're going to bust this myth. While birds often do flock together, it is not always and it's not a permanent thing. Some birds flock all year round,
mm-hmm.
like you mentioned, crows. Mm-hmm. Doves, blue jays, all sorts of jays.
Mm-hmm.
But some are seasonal flockers. Cardinals, chickadees, like bluebirds.
Oh.
And a flock is a general catch-all word. Like you were saying with starlings, those are 100,000 starlings moving together.
That's
it's a crazy number.
Mm-hmm.
But we can also talk about a flock of maybe like 10 birds.
Mm-hmm.
So let's get into busting this myth. Why do some birds not flock together? And like I said, again, not flock together all the time.
Yeah.
It is hard to, especially when you think about finding a mate, if we're, there's just got to be a time where their birds are going to come together.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, there are times when the birds do not come together because that's just like not the life they chose to live.
Can you imagine a murmuration of bald eagles? It would be terrifying.
Terrifying. What is hunting them? If I see a murmuration of bald eagles, I'm leaving because while
I
other people...
a harpy eagle, right?
Yeah. While everyone's watching them, like, the, how beautiful. I'm sprinting because something is coming to get them.
Yep.
And I don't want to be near whatever's hunting a pack of bald eagles. So, some choose to live on their own. Some don't find it helpful to eat all together in a flock. Mm-hmm. Why might that be the case?
Well, if there's like a more scarce food source, mm-hmm. you kind of want to hunt. Like I'm thinking about when I go paddleboarding on the lake, I see like osprey and bald eagles and things. Like there's not a ton of food because mm-hmm. they're looking for fish and things like that or small other birds. There's not a ton of food, so you don't want that much competition.
Yep. So you'll think of a lot of those, I'm blanking, the falcons.
Osprey.
Osprey. Mm-hmm. What's the birds of prey, I guess.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Raptors.
Raptors. Thank you. There we go. Of aren't really flockers.
No.
Again, all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I thought you were going to mention your heron friends.
Oh, my heron friends. Yeah.
We think of scarcity as a great... Scarcity being not a lot of resources or food around. Roadrunners,
mm-hmm.
Very opportunistic, live in very harsh environments. They live pretty much on their own. Some mate for life, but otherwise they are generally on their own. Sandpipers
mm-hmm.
tend to sort of go off on their own. You'll uh-huh. see them like together, but that's sort of where we get mixed with, is that really a flock or are they all just eating where there's the food?
Because they all eat the same food.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big one, is there's not a lot of food around. So you want your own food. You don't want to compete with others. Another thing, Margaret, let me give you an example.
Please.
Imagine you go to Disney World.
Mm-hmm.
And now imagine a world where it's safe to go to Disney World again.
Hard to do, but okay.
You have the options. Option A, you go with your friend.
Okay.
And the two of you get to enjoy Disney World together.
Okay.
Option B is you go with 20 of your friends.
No.
Why?
Chaos.
Why did you immediately say no?
Because coordinating what everyone wants to do sounds exhausting. I only want to ride Pirates of the Caribbean and Space Mountain 25 times in a row, but not everyone will want that.
You mentioned exhausting, and that is exactly the case why some birds do not flock together. It is actually energy consuming to flock.
Oh, really?
But there's a trade-off, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like all those
safety.
Reasons we
named. Yeah.
There's safety, there's food, there's a lot of reasons you might want to flock
mm-hmm.
together.
Mm-hmm.
But it does require energy, like you were saying. It's exhausting. You have to look for places that have more food. Potentially, you are flying more around. You have to find space.
It takes a
lot of space to keep the flock together.
Mm-hmm.
One example, a researcher... research jackdaws, which look kind of like crows.
Yes.
And they're in the crow family.
Why have I heard of them? Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
They found that to reduce the amount of energy, they saw that jackdaws who mate for life in large flocks only followed their mate.
Oh.
So they would move together in a flock, but they would only pay attention to the path that their mate was flying.
Okay.
What led to that was those jackdaws that weren't mating for life flapped their wings more because they were trying to follow the group.
Mm.
Whereas the jackdaws who had mated for life were just following their partner.
Okay.
It required less movement, similar to the Disney scenario. It's easier to follow one friend
yes.
than 20 friends.
Yes. Oh my gosh. That's a great analogy. But did you come up with that on your own?
I did.
That's really good.
Thanks. But there's a trade-off though. What were we just talking about with the starlings?
They murmurate.
Would it be easier to murmurate if you're following one person or if the whole group is moving together? Or would the murmuration look as How? Which one will make a better murmuration?
If you're trying to keep up with everybody.
Yes. A group that murmurates better. Mm-hmm. If you're everyone's just following one other person, it's very unorganized. Mm-hmm. It makes it easier for people to be picked off. Mm-hmm. So there is a trade-off.
Okay.
Jackdaws. And then this other part to this myth is some don't mate together or don't flock together. But then this other part, birds of a feather. Can birds of different feathers flock together?
Yes.
It is called a mixed flock, which is usually...
I call them a mixer.
A flocking mixer. It has two or more species of birds. Mm-hmm. So they are of different feathers who hang out together. Do you have an example?
I have an example, and I think it will work. Although I don't know if it counts as flocking together. Ooh, I might have to take this back. But when I think of like a bunch of different birds coming together at once... Mm-hmm. I think of an anchovy bait ball. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if they're not like hanging out together, because there's just food availability, but I'm thinking about, a bunch of birds of different species that might have their nests in the same area. Would that count?
So
like penguins, like a bunch of different species of penguins and. Other seabirds sometimes lay their eggs in the same location.
Potentially.
Okay.
The trick here is, do they have different feeding strategies?
Mm.
So
sometimes
this is a fun thing called niche partitioning. This idea that a lot of the different species can exist cooperatively in one place if they're not competing for the same resource.
Right.
So, like, our finches and our juncos who live all in our tree, they're not eating the same type of seeds. They're not necessarily competing for the same resource.
Okay.
Even though they might be so, quote-unquote, flocking sort of together in the same area.
Okay. Well...
So, for example, there are birds that hunt insects in the air. There are birds who eat things on the ground, like plants, whatever, seeds. They are not competing for the same food source, but they may be living otherwise in the same area. You could count them as flocking together. So basically, a mixed flock also kind of helps if there aren't a lot of you.
Mm-hmm.
You might mixed flock is there's just not a ton of other me's around.
So you still want that protection, but you don't have enough of your actual own species to afford that for you.
So I learned of a very interesting species.
Yes.
In all of this. So I learned that this mixed flocking happens a lot in the tropics.
Mm.
And that there are birds called ant followers that follow ant swarms. And these ant following birds, while they have a general word called ant follower, have been documented to have flocks of over 30 different species.
Oh.
So what they do, these ant followers come into, there's over 230 species of ant followers. They all generally live in the tropics. And what they do is they hunt small bugs that the ants eat. So the ants are going to hunt bugs.
Mm-hmm.
And when the ants find all of these bugs, the birds swoop in and eat the bugs.
Do some of the birds eat the ants themselves or no?
No, that's a misconception, but it's a very rare misconception. I don't know how many people are saying, you know, I always heard ant birds eat ants, which you would imagine from that name.
Uh-huh.
Ant birds or ant following birds do not eat ants. They follow the ants to where they're going to go eat.
Well, it's kind of like an oyster catcher actually eats a lot of mussels, not so much oysters.
That's a great analogy.
Again, not a widely held misconception.
Not a widely held misconception.
Okay, so they're really kind of using the ants as like noble English people would use beagles to find the deer or foxes, I guess.
The beagles don't want like the pheasant or whatever. They don't.
Might. I don't know.
Maybe.
They're
not eating the ants.
Yeah.
So it's actually kind of interesting because they don't eat the ants. They're eating what the ants want to eat. Mm-hmm. This is technically a form of parasitism.
Okay.
The birds are acting as parasites.
That's
which
wild.
Is a great example because most of the time we think of a parasite as something that lives in another
or at
thing?
Least of being really or. Of much tinier than the host.
Yeah, that's a great example. Love this example is parasitism. They are hurting the ants because they're eating the ants' food.
Mm-hmm.
They're hurting the ants indirectly.
Selfish.
Selfish little ant birds.
No, just kidding. Everybody's got to eat.
Everyone's got to eat. Love that movie. So yeah, that's all I learned. I have to finish up with two plugs.
Mm-hmm.
One is one of our absolute favorite apps of all time, Merlin Bird ID.
Yes. Produced
by the Cornell Lab of Ornithology. Just go to the Cornell Lab of Ornithology. There are amazing resources out there. They have a lot of citizen science things that you can explore. The app is called Merlin Bird ID. Amazing. They now have capabilities of you can take a picture and it will use AI to analyze what bird they think it is. It's mm-hmm. very accurate.
Mm-hmm.
Has pictures, times of year they mate, songs. It's great. And Margaret, on Earth Day 2020...
The 50th anniversary.
You got to tune in to a very special thing. Do you want to talk about it?
Yes. I was thinking about doing this for the thing I was excited, or that I was consuming.
So maybe.
Well, no, but I'm not going to.
Oh, great. Talk about it now. A bonus consumption.
Yes. So on Earth Day, again, tying in Johnny Flynn, great transition.
Murmurations. Yeah.
Murmuration. I saw that Johnny Flynn was going to be.
Johnny Flynn is a
he's
artist.
A English musician and actor. But I saw that he was going to be performing for this live fundraiser for this organization called the Nest Collective, which their mission is to bring back healthy nightingale populations in England. And so...
And nightingales are birds.
And so you can still find it on YouTube, I believe. But they called their live event Singing with Nightingales because... somebody was out in the field recording live nightingale sounds because I believe right now is the time of year where they're looking for mates, which is why they're singing so much, much like that motorcycle outside.
Singing to us,
our door. And then while these live nightingale songs were happening, musicians were playing and people were reading poems. It was gorgeous. And sometimes it would just be the sound of nightingales. It was very calming, very just like, I don't know. It just made me feel very calm and reflective. It was gorgeous.
Singing with Nightingales.
Find it on YouTube. All right. So as we mentioned, our last segment is something that we're consuming this week. So reading, watching, interested in. So Camden, do you want to go first? Since I did the misconception first, what have you been consuming?
I will. Margaret, what does your uncle do?
Oh no. He's a bus driver.
Cool. Bus driver. What kind of big bus? Little bus?
Pretty big bus.
Pretty big bus.
Double decker.
Where does he live?
He lives in Cleveland.
Cleveland. Uh-huh. Ohio?
No.
Mississippi?
No.
Man, I gave you an out. What's Cleveland then?
I think there's one in England.
Oh, he drives a bus in England. Uh-huh. Cool. What's his last name?
Phillips.
So his name is?
Phil.
Phil.
Phil Phillips.
Phil uh-huh. Phillips.
Uh-huh.
Drives a bus in England.
Uh-huh.
How long has he been doing that for?
2 days.
What you've seen and seen. What you've seen here, ladies and gentlemen, is improv.
No, that's...
Middle Ditch and Schwartz is a new Netflix special. It's also, you have not seen improv. But Middle Ditch and Schwartz is a Netflix special starring Thomas Middle Ditch from Silicon Valley and other things. And those commercials for Verizon. I don't know what he's on.
I think.
Sprint? No, not Sprint. Verizon.
Mm-hmm.
And Benjamin Schwartz, Benny Schwa, from he is John Ralphio in Parks and Rec.
Mm-hmm.
And he's on a lot of things. They host a long-form improv show. If you are new to improv, you might be familiar with Whose Line Is It Anyway?
That is short form.
This is long form. And if you're asking, what is it? It is longer. And that's kind of all I want to give you. It's still very funny. It's mm-hmm. very creative. And you should give it a try. And after watching it, you'll probably be very into long-form improv.
Yeah.
It's very good. It's very funny. Loved it.
I feel like it's pretty rare that long form improv is recorded.
Oh, yeah.
Like normally you think of Whose Line because they're short form, like little short games. Like there's some sort of like gimmick to it of like, hey, we're all guests at a party. But this long form is like really any, it can be anything.
Well,
anything.
And that is what improv is. Like improv and Whose Line is made up. The issue with Whose Line Is It Anyways was that they filmed a lot of games they never aired.
Mm-hmm.
This was in front of a live audience, mm-hmm. a huge audience that they toured around the country with. So what they filmed has to be aired. There's no redoing it if it's bad.
And I'm sure they like picked some really good shows, but
maybe,
like all of them are so good. I agree with Camden. I also watched it. It's there. I've seen, because Camden was a professional improviser, I've seen some bad improv.
Hold on. It sounds like the connection you just made was
sorry, because I
watched Camden do it.
No. I mean, like, I've seen you in shows where it'll be like a couple different troupes. You have always been great.
She can't save it now.
Your improv is always... I'm serious. You're very funny. But there are other troupes that I've watched on those nights when you've performed that are like...
Oh, you know bad improv when you see it.
But I also know good improv, and Middleditch and Schwartz is good.
Find on Netflix.
It's good.
Margaret.
Sorry, I feel like I commandeered half of your thing.
That's okay. No, that's... I like it when we talk on this show and not just like my turn.
Monologue.
Speaking of your turn, go ahead.
I feel like you will also have things to say about this because it's quarantine, we've been doing everything together. And everything we watch, together. No, we have similar interests because we're similar birds.
Oh, Was that a laugh line?
It's fine. So I recently suggested that Camden and I watch a documentary called The Galapagos Affair, Satan Came to Eden. Now you might think, two biologists mentioning the Galapagos is a sort of some sort of tortoise finch love story based on Darwin? No.
Oh, I want to watch that one though.
It is not. It is a documentary about two people from Germany who had some very interesting ideas, who moved to Floriana, which is this was this deserted island in the Galapagos Islands. They moved there in 1929, and the hijinks that occur. Hijinks makes it sound like it's all funny. It is not all funny. It is
crazy. The pure form of hijinks. Some stuff happens.
But there is an astonishing amount of film from this time. Like, this doesn't spoil anything, but like people come and visit them and you can see it. Like, there's footage of this, which is pretty rare, but it is fascinating. Camden normally, like both of us usually like need something to do while we watch a movie, especially a documentary that's 2 hours. But it is so enthralling, and I even knew the story beforehand, and it's fascinating.
Margaret got me because she tricked me. I heard Galapagos, and that was all I needed to hear. No biology really at all came through. Oh, did you see some cool iguanas and birds and stuff?
Tortoises.
But you came for the iguanas, you're going to leave with a better story.
Yeah. Oh, it's so good. I think it's on Amazon.
Nope.
Well, you
Amazon.
It's on Amazon, but you have to sign up for like the
Sundance
thing. If you like it, I guess you could keep it. You also can just do the free trial. But it's great. We've all got a little bit more time these days, so I'd suggest you use some of it to watch Middleditch and Schwartz, and then for a completely different feeling, watch The Galapagos Affair, Satan Came to Eden.
Depending on who you are, one of those will definitely cleanse your palate.
Or if you're me, you just gobble all of it right on up. So with that, we want to thank you so much for listening today. If you liked this episode or any of our others, please rate us and leave us a quick review on the podcast platform of your choice. That helps people find us and know what they're getting into. So help us out and help us find new listeners by leaving us a quick positive review.
You can hear more content like this from our Sister Wife podcast, From U to O, hosted by my co-host, Margaret.
A quick note about that. I like to interview people for that podcast about traditionally non-charismatic animals, like, you know, why we need skunks and why they're important. So if you are an expert
Or no expert
about a traditionally uncharismatic animal. It can be really anything from like worms to tarantulas to
hornets,
Tasmanian devil, like whatever. Yeah. Lots of people consider lots of different things to be non-charismatic, but let me know. So, Don't Pee on Your Leg and Other Scientific Misconceptions. It's a podcast produced by Two Birds, One Scone. Articles, blog posts, and more about what you can do every day to conserve our environment can be found at twobirdsonescone.org.
Our original music is by Camillo.
And if you have scientific misconceptions, or if you know someone who's an expert on one of those animals we mentioned, you can provide us with that information or any feedback you have to don'tpeeonyourleg@gmail.com.
Have a great week.